up, everybody? Welcome back to the Real Rundown. Today we're going to talk about Five Nights at Freddy, or what the kids call it, FNF. I bet you guys didn't know that.
I was not aware of that.
You know, the silence of me not responding means I didn't know that. It's just the silence expresses what I want to feel.
I'm guessing nobody went to the theater to watch Five Nights.
No, I did not. I didn't travel that far away. I didn't travel that far to watch it.
I don't know who would have done that when it premiered simultaneously on Peacock.
I'll tell you who. Right after this. I want to start off the show.
Wait, it's only been a minute. We're doing a commercial break already?
No, that was just a teaser. We're going to go segue right into, sadly, Matthew Perry. This isn't generally like our wheelhouse of shows or content that we cover, but I thought it was significant to just mention Matthew Perry's passing. I was not a big... Did you guys watch Friends early on? It was like the Friends... Obviously, the mega show in the 90s, and then like 10 years ago, there was like a revival when millennials started, and millennials started watching.
It became relevant again for some reason, right?
Yeah, it had like a second running on Netflix. I did watch some in the 90s. I wasn't really a fan. I didn't really follow. I just caught like reruns here and there because it was usually packaged with like Seinfeld, an episode of Seinfeld or two, and then two episodes of Friends or like some other show mixed in. And maybe sometimes I caught that. Did you guys watch that show at all?
I watched it, but I don't remember it because I was too young to...
Well, look at this guy, too young.
Hey. I was too young to basically be to watch the show and completely understand it or pay attention. Because the show started in 1994, and I think it went on for up until, I think, 2000, 2001. What I think was monumental about Matthew Perry passing away, he's like one of the, you know, biggest stars from a sitcom of millennials growing up, because you had Jennifer Aniston, Lisa Kudrow, Courtney Cox, Matt LeBlanc, David Schwimmer. All of them,
they're all still young.
Yeah, and they're still fairly young. Yeah,
I think he was 54, if I'm not mistaken, 50-something. But yeah, no, I didn't watch Pedro. What's your anything to Friends?
Yeah, I think it's a show that everyone watched when it was, like, you know, popular on the air back when it was actually airing. And I mean, it wasn't, like, something that I tuned in all the time for, but I think I watched it on like syndication or something at some point, like everyone else.
And it's actually still in syndication. It's on, it's on two or three times a night, at least in local syndication. And it's also on, I think it's on Nickelodeon on a loop.
Yeah. There weren't back then. We weren't bombarded with a bunch of show selections and TV sitcoms and stuff. So there were a limited amount, and that was like one that everyone watched. I've also heard that like for people who are either new to the United States or like learning English as a second language, like that's a huge show for people from what I've heard. Yeah.
And also, I would think it was one of the main shows that was considered appointment TV because no one had DVRs at the time. At that time, you had to be in front of the TV to actually watch it. Otherwise, you had to wait until the summer to watch a repeat. You only had one chance to watch it, and that was it. And quite a few people, that's what they did on their. I think it was on Thursday. Must See Thursday, I think it was called, when it was on.
My only appointment TV was Saturday morning cartoons at that time. I wasn't around for the PM hour. My wife apparently like used to watch the show. She used to watch it in Spanish because they did the like the dubbed version. And we started watching it yesterday. She was like, "Oh, let's put it on." So we put it on. We had it actually on dubbed in Spanish so she can sort of relive that for a few minutes. But And Yeah, it's kind of just as I remembered. It's okay. It's not hilarious, but I get why it was relevant at the, like, it made me realize, oh, I can totally see this show just like completely taking over. Absolutely. Pedro, you asked earlier, like, you know, just going back to Matthew Perry specifically, like, what else did he do? He actually did a show shortly after the Friends series on NBC. It was called Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. It was like a drama about the behind the scenes of like a Saturday Night Live kind of show on NBC. It got canceled after two seasons, or maybe one season, about 20 episodes. But I liked that show. I was actually watching that show while it aired. And I remember him being on that. But that's kind of it that he was in, you know, in terms of like what was on my radar. He actually did a bunch of stuff, but I didn't really watch any of it.
He was in a sitcom on CBS where I could see it was called The Odd Couple. It was a, I think it was a remake of The Odd Couple. It was on for 2 years.
All right, so he did stuff.
It was on two or three seasons. It was like one of those shows that was on, but it was on, I think it was a summer replacement because it had, he was on 38 episodes, but it was stretched for 3 years.
There was also, did you guys hear like the conspiracy theory surrounding his death?
Nope.
Pedro, this is where your mouth starts watering. So apparently, you know, I'm not into these things. Again, my wife, shout out. She comes up and she's like, do you know about this conspiracy stuff around Matthew Perry? I don't. She apparently he left, like he never posted anything on social media, and 7 days or 2 weeks prior to his death, he left several messages that are now being interpreted in multiple ways. One of them being like he drops a bunch of cranberries on like a table and he says like, this is all I've had to eat today. And people connecting that to like the lead singer of the Cranberries who also died drowned in the pool. And then there's other things I'm not going to get into, but that's another reason I wanted to bring it up because it is a little spicy.
Is the conspiracy supposed to be hiding something or just a bunch of things that are like coincidences and like, oh, that's suspicious?
It's probably the latter, but then that leads to the former, if that makes sense, or vice versa. You know, and it's the internet, so this thing just gonna run wild.
Yeah, I remember like when Kobe Bryant died, there was a bunch of stuff connecting like, oh, he did this. He appeared on this. He said this. He was in this commercial that did this. Bunch of stuff, so.
Yeah, I don't know how interesting it is, but if you go on Twitter and you type Matt Man, MATT Man, you get into the rabbit hole. Let's move on.
I've already moved myself very far away from that rabbit hole. I'm so far away that I'm nowhere near it. I'm like on a whole nother planet.
So last pod we talked about It Follows, and I think we mentioned Good Burger, and now we're getting sequels to both. I think we already knew about the sequels to Good Burger, but we got the official trailer and we got the announcement that It Follows, a horror movie from 2014, I think, is getting a sequel.
Is there a trailer to It Follows too?
No,
Or
just
it's
an
just an
announcement.
announcement?
Yeah, and it's apparently called They Follow. So I don't know
Okay.
if that's like I guess there's more than one now. I'm excited for that. I think it's the same director and the same cast, or the cast who survived. And Good Burger too. I saw the trailer. You guys were pretty hyped in the text chain.
I am hyped about that. That movie's like, to what, tw 30 years in the making or something? Almost 30.
Little less, little less, little less.
It's what, like a 1997, 1998 movie?
Yeah, I
Like
think so.
25
Yeah,
years?
it did. It wasn't in the 2000s yet. It was before. I think it was before that. Like 98 is what it was. But based on the order of what the way you mentioned the movies, I have a feeling you're not as excited about Good Burger 2.
No, I'm not. I think I mentioned in the last pod,
I
and you
knew
guys.
it. I knew it. I knew it. Somehow I knew it. I don't know how I knew it, but I knew it.
That's why I'm doing less talking than you guys. You know, I want to let you guys do a virtual high five,
I
celebrate.
can't wait. I can't wait for us to do a movie review of the movie. We could all watch it together and you can give us all your thoughts. about Keenan and
Kel. I was thinking, I was like, I know they liked the movie, but I wonder if we're actually going to cover it.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll cover it just because you love it so much. We'll cover it, don't you worry.
It's not even so much like, oh, yes, they're making a movie, another movie. It's more like, I'm just relieved that, like, you know, they're going to make that there's a feel-good movie coming out that's, I guess, you know, no pressure or low pressure. It's not like a high-stakes thing, and they're, you know, following the trend, I guess, of, like, bringing back 90s stuff and, like, you know, this generation's childhood memories, so.
And it doesn't have to be good.
It doesn't have to take, itself seriously or anything, you know, so.
I don't need it to be good.
Yeah, we need more of these, like, movies where, you know, they don't take themselves too seriously, and it's just like, you know, we're not trying to make $1 billion at the box office. We're just trying
to drop a good movie.
I like how you say we, as if like your team, Keenan and Kel, like you guys are putting this out.
Pedro, what investment do you?
I'm thinking what like Nickelodeon is thinking, or you know, whoever's publishing the movie.
Paramount's like, not doing this for charity. They're doing it to make something, and they want all those people to come out and want to become a Paramount Plus subscriber. That's why they're making it, because they certainly didn't get that from Zoe Whitehead 2.
You said the last, so this is part 2. The first one came out in the late 90s? Is that right?
Yeah.
1997.
Oh, wow. So this is a long time coming.
Oh, yes. They needed time to get a streaming platform to put it on.
Even back then, it's just funny how it went on to make its own full-length movie, because it was just like a stupid, like, it was funny because it was corny. It was funny because it was corny, but everyone knew it was corny and cheesy, but that's what made it funny. And it was really just a spinoff of a skit from All That and the Keenan and Kel Show, right?
No, it was only All That.
Or just All That.
Yeah, only All That.
Yeah, so people laughed at the fact that it was cheesy, but they enjoyed it because it was cheesy, and then it just became so popular of a skit, and like a recurring skit, that they're just like, let's make a whole movie on it.
All right. Is that coming just to Paramount, or is that getting a theater release?
I don't know. The trailer looked good.
They're promoting it to be on Paramount Plus.
Okay. The trailer looked good. I don't even remember at the end if it said theaters or, but.
Scott, you got that info. When does it drop? And is it streaming only?
I believe it's
coming out later this month, right?
It's streaming starting November 22nd on Paramount Plus.
Okay.
Only Paramount Plus.
I actually don't have Paramount Plus.
Well, this is a good opportunity to get.
I'll see if there's a deal out there.
You'll probably be able to catch a Black Friday deal just in time for the movie.
Oh yeah, that's a good time to revisit all my subscriptions, actually. Okay. time to make a new email address.
And make a reminder on like November 24th to cancel subscriptions and renew them for work?
We don't have to mention it, but what about that tool you use to, I think we all know what it is, that tool that tells you all those subscriptions, is that not working out? You're not being honest with it?
No, it does, but if a movie drops like on Paramount, it probably will be there, but not the same day, maybe not even the same week. So Pedro mentioned Scream 6, like that, even though it's on the streaming platform, that's something I can easily watch. But if it's like day and day, a little bit more challenging. Usually it's about a week or so, depending. Do you guys want to move on to Friday Nights at Freddy? I wanted to maybe mention the SAG strike, as there has been some momentum in sort of getting things reconciled and potentially resolution. Scott, did you want
to? I don't think there's anything to talk about other than it just. Well, we could talk.
There's
about
movement,
the
right? Like they're getting there.
There's movement, just like on a highway that has a lot of bumper traffic. There's some movement, but not anything to get to your destination.
Slow motion better than no motion.
Yes, but it is still causing a commotion.
Okay, let's move on to main topic. Today we're going to talk about Five Nights at Freddy. Peacock dropped last week, dropped the week, Halloween weekend, or prior to. It stars Josh Hutcherson as the sort of like night watchman of a Chuck E. Cheese kind of place where the animatronic characters come out at night and try to murder you. It's based on a video game that came out, I think, 2013 or 2014. And it's another Blumhouse banger. Blumhouse, man. These guys are all over these horrors. They just like, they're everywhere on the horror scene now.
I want to say that like the last like five horror movies I've watched have all been Blumhouse. So it seems like they're the only ones producing horror movies right now.
And they do everything. Like they don't... I remember like you know, a couple years ago when we used to go together, we used to go to like the 14th Street movie theater and watch these Blumhouse movies and just like make fun of them. And now they're like a serious like film studio, like where they're making good stuff.
Because they were like more focusing, I guess, obviously they were a smaller like production house. So it was more like, some of like the indie stuff was theirs.
Yeah, and like, that movie maybe, Smile.
And maybe like some really like low budget B movies every once in a while were there, but now it's just like everything.
It's everything. Remember Happy Death Day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
saw that in theaters.
I never watched the sequel, but the original one I enjoyed in the theaters.
Yeah, I actually, that was pretty cool too. That was not the early stuff. That was a little bit later on, but you can kind of see how they got to where they are, and now they're everywhere. So
I missed that movie. I somehow didn't see it.
Happy Death Day.
I did not. I skipped that holiday.
It's pretty cool. It's like Groundhog Day, but it's her birthday, and she gets killed on her birthday over and over. And then, you know, it's Groundhog Day style. Basically, she tries to sort of look at it and change her actions throughout. It's interesting. But okay. So did you guys know anything? I know like we watched the trailer a couple of months ago, the teaser rather. We're all very excited about it. Were you guys hyped up going into the film? Did you know that it was based on a video game? Like anything?
I figured out it was based on a video game because I saw in the opening credits it said based on a video game. It said something to that.
Like breaking news. Yeah. Yes. As it's happening.
Yes. I heard theme music and all when I saw it. But I was curious on of Josh Hutcherson was the only person in the cast that I knew of.
Same. Well,
other than Matthew Lillard, I knew of him. But that was
from it. Scream. You know him from Scream. Come on, dog.
Well, no. Thank you. I appreciate you giving me credit of thinking I knew him from Scream. No, I saw him because of trailers of Scooby-Doo and
True Lies. Shaggy.
Yes, you know, and amongst other things that is not coming to mind. But yes, I know him from other things.
Pedro, your initial gut feeling on Freddy.
Prior to watching it, I didn't know much about the franchise. I had heard it was a video game. I had heard it here and there. I never looked into it or anything. After I saw the trailer, I did want to watch it after watching the trailer because I'm like, okay, so it's like a good horror movie, you know, like the characters are different. I always like a sort of like fun house type atmosphere or whatever. And, you know, I'm also like questioning, like, I wonder how the gameplay is for the video game because, you know, like if this movie's based on it, you know, it's like, that's not the most exciting concept for a video game where you're like a security guard. But I'm assuming it must be one of those games where you like walk around a lot and like search around a lot and.
Yeah, no, the video game it's actually not like that at all. It's a very low budget, small independent video game that came out like 10 years ago or so. But basically, the premise is, you just control, like, it's kind of like a point and click. Do you know those point and click games where you just click on things? So you have like the POV of the main character, and you have access to several cameras, and you can click and watch the cameras. And then there are also like doors to the security guard's room, the camera room. And when the animatronics come alive at night, they try to come for you. So you have to like watch the cameras, close the doors when they're nearby. And I think at like 6 a.m. if you survive the night, then like you start over day two, and you're supposed to survive as long as you can. I don't know if there's like a max.
Yeah, so that makes sense that it would have been like some sort of different style video games.
So it's like puzzle, not so much, I guess puzzle, like survival, has like some jump scares. So I've never played the game. You know, horror games freak me out a little bit, even though I am a big gamer. And then I didn't even know that. I know they made a few sequels, but there's books on this stuff. There's tons of sequels. There's tons of lore. There's a huge, huge, huge interest in not just the film, not just the games, but like, again, like the IP itself, I guess. So I was very surprised. I want to talk about this later, but I'll bring it up now. The movie made $78 million. At the box office. It's the third highest horror movie opening of all time. It's the biggest ever opening on Halloween weekend, and it grossed $130 million so far on a $25 million budget. So it just blew everything away, to everyone's surprise, especially considering that it dropped on Peacock the same day.
But what was it? What was it competing with?
I don't know. None 2, Flowers of the Killer Moon,
The Nun 2 was just, I don't know if it just dropped, but I just recently saw it this weekend on HBO Max. So that must have been their like Max's new release, like probably.
But I think the driving factor was teenagers who grew up on the game, who loved the game and the lore. And when this came out, like, they all went in droves to watch it. Because we are clearly like, and we can talk about the film. I don't think we're the target audience for the film. I think we are as a people who just watch movies, but not so much for the property itself. Like, these characters don't really mean anything to me. But as I said, the lore is huge. I actually learned that 2 famous YouTubers are in the film as like very small roles. So it has like that internet, more social reach that, you know, we're sort of aged out of at this point. And it also has a PG-13 rating. So if you're a 15-year-old kid, you can go see this movie, no problem. Or if you're younger, you can go see this movie, no problem. But I was blown away by the box office. And then, you know, us, people like us, we'll just watch it at home. Because
it's not exactly the movie you want to take a younger sibling to that's exciting to have their birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese's. Not exactly good for that.
No, probably not.
No.
So talking about the film is basically about Josh Hutcherson's character is kind of like dealing with some personal family trauma. He's down on his luck. He takes this job working nights at this Chuck E. Cheese kind of place. It's called Freddy Fazbear's. That's what it's called. That's what the chain is called. There's also like a custody thing with his younger sibling. He has a younger sister and her aunt, his sister. I don't know. There's like this custody battle over her.
I think it was his aunt, which that came
his
up.
His aunt.
Yeah. That just dropped really quickly. So it's like, oh, sorry, where did that come from?
Agreed.
We get into family issues already, and now we're going into family court.
Yeah.
Without the courthouse or a court case or a judge, it's just like, here's some court papers. It's his family court. Okay, family court. We're supposed to believe there's a family court matter.
Right. Yeah. It's all, the plot is not great. Like, I like him getting the job as the nice security guard at this place. Great. You have like this amazing Chuck E. Cheese setting. This place has also been closed for 30 years, and somehow for some reason it needs security every night. That's not really ever clear on why that is.
That was probably my biggest issue with the movie.
Yeah, it just, there's a lot that doesn't quite add up or is logical.
And how are they paying for the, now that we're going so detailed into this, how are they paying for the security if there's no business anymore? Not if they haven't been open in 30 years. How are they paying for
security? There's still an owner. They mentioned there's still an owner that hires security to go in every night.
Right. But yeah, that was whatever. I was like, okay, I don't need this explained. But
I want to see I want to see their balance sheet. I've been watching too many of these like Kitchen Nightmares, Restaurant Rescue. I want to see their balance sheet. They can't afford security. They just shut it down. But anyway,
you got to talk to Freddie.
I don't know if I want to talk to Freddie. He's a little scared.
So the main sort of driver for Josh's character is that his brother was kidnapped or taken when he was a little kid, and now every night he goes to sleep, but he has these dreams where he like tries to force himself to remember who took his brother or how his brother was taken. And again, that's something that's like, you're just like, wait, what? How does he do that? What are you doing here? And again, it's a stretch. And that's how he finds himself at Freddy's.
I did like the flashbacks and the whole sort of like some story of him trying to piece together and bring closure to like this traumatic event that happened to him in his childhood. I liked that part. That was like, I don't know, for me, I kind of liked that.
I liked it too. It was just a stretch on like how he got there. The fact that every night he goes to sleep and like he goes to the dream. He goes back to that scene in his dreams every single night. Like you can't will that, but he did.
And then so he couldn't remember the kidnapper's face until what the little girl told him who it was, or who was it that revealed to him who the kidnapper was?
Well, it was a cop, the woman cop, who's like another character with, you know, family trauma, right?
It was her that revealed who the kidnapper was?
Yeah, because in the dream, he goes to the dream, and each time he goes to the dream, he sort of takes a step forward, right? Mm-hmm. Then he starts seeing those five kids in the dream. He's trying to talk to them. They don't respond. Those five kids pretty much resemble the animatronic characters. That I liked. I thought that was cool. Like each of the five kids was one of the characters who had also been taken. And then his younger sister, I don't know, man. What was happening?
Didn't they also say that those five kids are the animatronics themselves? Like the kidnapper put them in these animatronic costumes and then that's...
Yes.
That's how, and like when they said that, I was like, wait, so they like grew up all these years in those animatronic costumes and like what became like adults, just like the main character? Like what's going on? I didn't understand that.
It's like a superhero movie. It doesn't matter how they got to that point. You just believe it and you just go forward. Doesn't matter how they got in the costume. That's it.
That's what I figured. I just figured like it's things that don't need to be that don't need to make sense because they already have the fan base and the demand there for it. And, you know, the people that are into the lore and I guess all those, there's like books that came out of this stuff on top of the video games. Like they're already past all that.
I think there was too much time in this movie that you started asking yourself questions like I would. It's like there was way too much time to go, how did we get to this point? And why are we keeping going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth? Like, let's go forward.
Yeah, I think that was part of my issue with the movie too. Look, again, all these things we mentioned, there's real no clear explanation. You kind of just have to go with it, like you guys said. And they're left up to your interpretation or you just ignore them. But yeah, I think the problem I had with the movie was what Scott is kind of alluding to. It was just slow and it took a long time to for things to begin adding up. I thought the whole thing with the aunt didn't really connect with the rest of the movie for me. And it slowed things down, as you said. Like, why are we going back to this? It was just another thing that this guy had to deal with on top of, like, the animatronic robots, on top of this police officer showing up randomly because, like, that was her beat, apparently.
Which I don't know where she came from. It's just like...
She just appeared.
She just appeared. She's like a video game character that just runs into the person and starts telling them their life stories. I didn't ask you. Why are you telling me all this stuff about yourself?
Well, like, off the bat from her first appearance, she knew, like, she's up to something, you know, like, she's not just going to, like, show up there every night just because it's on her beat, you know?
Right. It's like, I've been coming here for years. It's like, well, this place has been open for 30 years. You're 30 years old. Like, but, and in terms of, here's what I got to say. I want to say something positive about this movie. Because I, despite everything, I didn't dislike it as much as the critics on Rotten Tomato who gave this thing a 29. I was surprised by that. I thought the animatronic creatures were really, really dope. I thought the sound effects, the way they moved around, I thought they kept that basic in a way that they felt and looked and sounded like animatronics. I loved that. I love the music of the whole movie. And I love just the production design, just the set of being at Freddy Fazbear's, I thought looked awesome and very haunting and terrifying. I just don't think they did enough with it. I think they could have done more inside of the Chuck E. Cheese setting and less with the, as Scott said, the custody battle thing. But it did have that vibe, and you can see it from the first teaser that we saw. Like, the vibe and everything was there. I just think the execution wasn't really 100% for me.
Up until you said about the pacing, that sounded like an American Idol Ellen DeGeneres judge a response to someone performing, because it was so no matter how terrible the person is, she would always find something, which is, to her credit, a talent. No matter what, she would think everything was great. The person could have had pitch problems, forgot the words, but everything was great. But I agree with what you said, that yes, the music was good, the animation was really good, but then when you thought about the story, you went, oh yeah, there's other parts to this that I don't like. When you saw the robotics, it looked good. But
I also liked in movies like this, and this is not the first one where it's like you have to survive the night kind of movies. And there's also video games with this type of scenario where you have to survive the night or the darkness or whatever. There's a sense of relief when they cut to morning. You like we mentioned last week, the movie Barbarian. When they cut to those early morning shots and the characters are in broad daylight and they're their normal settings again, you get a sense of relief. And then it's back when we're in the Chuck E. Cheese location that you tighten up. And I just feel like when we're in the Chuck E. Cheese location, instead of the scares, they still continue to push a narrative. And I was like, I just want scares. I just want stuff to happen.
There definitely weren't enough scares or shocking moments for this to be sort of my type of scary movie.
Yeah, no. There was like cuts to, like, there's a scene where one of the, a character like opens the fridge and he sees like a cupcake animatronic in there.
Yeah, that was like a jump scare.
Right. And then he turns around and there's the big guy.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, holy cow. But then they don't really show you the brutality of what a 7-foot metal bunny could do to you, right? They kind of just show like a, you know, like there's a lot that they cut away from, for example. Same thing with the janitor closet guy where it cuts away and then there's just like a bloody handprint on the glass. A lot of stuff like that.
And also, what time frame does the movie take place in? Because no one had cell phones, right?
It was, I think they didn't establish it, but it was made to be known that this was like, you know, either 90s or like early 2000s or something, because there were a couple of things in the movie that suggested that it wasn't modern. It wasn't like right now, happened right now.
Yeah, it felt encapsulated in a very specific time. I don't know when that is, but yeah, I would say 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, I mean they were all driving older cars. It wasn't meant to take place in present time.
There's a goof that's written on IMDb, and it says Abby is seen coloring one of her pictures, and the marker is seen using was a brand from Target that did not launch until 2021. So, that for continuity concerns, that was a color brand that wasn't in existence when the movie. So,
this is a wild take, but that might fly under the radar, Scott.
Yeah, shame on the set designer. How dare they use the wrong coloring pens?
This sort of storyline, Hollywood has been wanting to do stuff with this sort of like storyline, because apparently reading that the Banana Splits movie that came out in 2019 is speculated to be a reworking of the original Five Nights at Freddy's film that Warner Brothers commissioned before it sold the rights to Blumhouse.
What is Banana Splits?
Banana Splits is like an old show from like the 60s, 70s with like some... you'll have to look it up. I don't know how to describe it, but it's people like dressed up as like ascots. But they made like a horror movie version of it in 2019. And that was supposed to... That's Warner Brothers' like take on this sort of genre. And then in 2021, Nicolas Cage was in a movie called Willy's Wonderland, which the plot was inspired by Five Nights at Freddy's, in which people are attacked by possessed animatronic characters at a Chuck E. Cheese type restaurant.
Okay, yeah, that's exactly
so
it.
This sort of like plot, atmosphere, like visual type thing has been, they've been trying to mess with that because it's good, you know, like it looks good. You watch the trailer and like you see like a kid's play restaurant and neon lights and like mascots attacking, and it's like, yeah, it looks like something I'd watch. And that's for me that's where this movie felt short. It felt short on that, you know, like that's what I tuned in for, was to see like these more of this like kid's restaurant and more like deaths happening inside of it. It would have worked for me if it was like, if it all took place in one night, if like a bunch of like teenagers or like different security people got trapped in this place and the place was bigger and like each animatronic or whatever character got its own like death kill split into like four or five, how many ever there were, in like their own like room or something. Like their own death room or something, that would have worked better for me. But I just felt like ultimately, I just felt like way too enclosed in this little space. Like it just felt small, you know. Like it should have been like a huge like maze, like Chuck E. Cheese type, you know, place. But it wasn't that. It was like two or three rooms. It was like the security room, the main room where the stage was, and like the like backstage prop room where the...
Yeah, and then that hallway where they all were, like they had like three death scenes or scares in that
in
one
the same,
hallway.
Yeah, in the same place. It's like, why? It just felt so enclosed and small.
Now, why is it that the band only played Talking in Your Sleep by the Romantics? That's all they played.
That's a great song. I was wondering what that song has to do with the franchise, but it was a great selection because it was creepy to watch these things play that song.
It entertained me every single time. I was like, oh yeah, it got my attention again every time they played it. But I wonder why that song was selected.
But yeah, Pedro, to your point, it would have been cool if each one of the animatronics got their time to shine, both from, you know, the point of killing something, and also, you know, they didn't get put down ultimately for different reasons, but they should have got their time to shine. The one that did was the Coyote with the Hook. He got his time to shine a little bit, but it would have been cool to spend a little bit more time with them.
There was a movie that came out a few years ago. It was another horror movie, and it was based on an escape room type thing. You guys remember that movie? I forget what it was called. It might have been called Game Room or something.
But yeah, it was like, yeah.
It was like a couple teenagers. They had to make their way through like this escape room, you know, and like that's how the movie was set up. Like every room was a trap. It was different than the next room. Somebody would die in each room, and like they had to make their way till the end. I would have liked to see something like that in this movie, you know, like they have like a start and a finish, you know, like they need to be some sort of source of sense of urgency where they like need to make their way out of this place. But like this guy could have just clocked out and walked out off his shift at any point, right?
And I think that's, you know, that's what the video game is. You basically go to work every night, you stay alive, but you're not actively running or confronting these things. They're just slowly making their way to you as you sort of figure out a way to prevent them from getting to you. And the movie played a little bit more with the little sister's character, and connecting her to the bigger story of the kidnappings and things like that. So it was a little bit more involved. But yeah, I agree. It was a little disappointing. And again, I enjoyed the visuals, I enjoyed the aesthetic and the soundtrack, but ultimately felt a little short. They certainly set up for a sequel, and given the box office and the reception, reception's 89%.
There's going to be sequels, yeah.
There'll be sequels.
It's number one on IMDb right now, it shows.
Yeah, it's a massive hit. So they'll definitely, and it's a huge hit for Peacock. Congratulations to them. So there's going to be sequels. I'm here for it. I'm down. I'll watch another one.
I won't be tuning it, but I am. I'll say one thing. I'm happy that this has found success due to the fact that they're using animatronics over CGI. Like, I'm happy that a movie that's doing that is doing well, because we need more of that stuff, man. Anytime you watch, like, you know, these horror movies like The Thing that you mentioned last week and all these things, like, it just looks so much better than CGI. So
they're terrifying. I agree. I'm just happy that this thing is making a boatload of money and that people are going to the movie theaters to watch movies, because I know Exorcist bombed, The Nun 2, I don't know how that did, but a lot of movies just bomb.
Well, it hit on the perfect weekend, you know, they got that part right.
Yeah, but even then, the biggest ever, you know, for the weekend. So it's doing something right. It found its audience. So, and you know, especially considering that it dropped on Peacock, you could have just stayed home Friday night and watched it. Scott, you going to watch the sequel or what?
We'll see. We'll see if we get to that point.
Yeah, this just came out less than a week ago. So
let me let the first one sink in. And if they do come out with another one, we'll figure it out then.
You know what? I'm with the critics on this one. It's a Rotten Tomato on my end, but you know what? This might have worked better as a like miniseries than just a standalone movie. But then again, I think everyone has TV show and series fatigue right now, because everything is a damn series. And after that first one or two episodes, everything just loses steam. But they could have, you know, drawn the story out more elaborately over a couple of 1 hour episodes.
Okay. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Hope y'all enjoyed your Halloween and watched a lot of scary movies.
Boo.
All right, guys. Like, subscribe. We'll see you next time. Peace.